This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
The headlines. The U.S.-Israeli genocidal war continues for the 121st day. The death toll now tops 27,350, mostly women and children. During a funeral ceremony for the victims of the latest U.S. airstrikes in Iraq, the chief of the country's popular mobilization forces demands the full withdrawal of all foreign troops. And Yemen vows to continue, barring Israeli-linked vessels from accessing the Red Sea, despite the U.S. and U.K. airstrikes on the country. Thanks for joining us. Nearly 130 more Palestinians have been killed in another day of Israeli strikes in Gaza as the regime's genocide grinds on into a fifth month. Two children were killed and several injured after the regime targeted a kindergarten where displaced people were sheltering in Rafah. The city is located in southern Gaza near the border with Egypt. It hosts more than 1 million displaced Palestinians and has become the focus of Israeli onslaught. Elsewhere and in central Gaza, two people were killed and several injured, including children, in a strike on a residential building. Israeli attacks in Gaza have claimed the lives of over 27,300 people since October 7, while nearly 67,000 have been injured. Palestinian officials have blasted the international community's failure to stop the Israeli onslaught and the humanitarian catastrophe unfolding in Gaza. Palestine's foreign ministry warned against a possible Israeli military operation on the city of Rafah in South Gaza. The ministry said an aggression on the city would either lead to the annihilation of about 1.5 million Palestinians or would result in their displacement. The warning came in reaction to comments made by Israeli Military Affairs Minister Yoav Gallant. He had earlier said that the Israeli army would turn its focus on Rafah along the border with Egypt. We were earlier joined by our correspondent in Gaza, Moti Abu Musaba, for the latest updates about the situation in the city of Rafah.
That the city is completely overwhelmed with at least 1.3 million Palestinian civilians who have been forced and compelled to flee their neighborhoods and their residential buildings and residential squares. Over the last 4 months, the Israeli occupation forces have been pushing the Palestinian civilians to evacuate their neighborhoods, their houses, claiming that Rafah City is a safe area. So we are talking about overwhelming conditions in terms of the area of the city and even the infrastructure of the city. The current conditions are catastrophic for the people. Particularly when it comes to the humanitarian conditions, those people and the vast majority of them actually have no access to the basic humanitarian needs, particularly when it comes to the water, food, and sanitation and the medical necessities for them. As you know, that the current weather conditions are perishing in the winter of Gaza. Having any attacks on the city means catastrophic conditions, means more casualties, more massacres against the Palestinian civilians. So we are in front of catastrophic conditions, and no one knows how the situation would be in case the Israeli occupation forces attack the city and executed and carried out a ground offensive against that city.
Palestinian resistance movement Hamas is insisting on the withdrawal of Israeli troops from the war-ravaged and blockaded territory as part of any ceasefire deal. Hamas says the plan should also provide for a complete stop to Israel's onslaught, an end to the blockade of Gaza, and post-war reconstruction of the Strip. It also wants the release of thousands of Palestinian prisoners. A new proposal has been offered to Hamas for a ceasefire and the release of captives that it is holding in Gaza. It followed talks in Paris involving Israeli, U.S., Egyptian, and Qatari representatives. Pressure is building on Israel from the international community and even its Western allies to stop its military offensive on Gaza, which has resulted in large-scale death and destruction. Displaced Palestinians in the Gaza Strip are now having to take shelter in destroyed buildings amid relentless Israeli strikes.
Our six-story house in the north was bombed and 42 people lie dead under the rubble. We have not been able to reach them. We were displaced to the city of Khan Yunis first, then we fled to the city of Rafah after the Israeli tanks stormed in. We found no shelter for ourselves except under the rubble. It's a very unsafe place, but we have no other choice.
The schools are now severely overcrowded and tents are not safe enough to live in the current weather conditions. The UN says Israel's strikes have damaged more than 60% of the buildings in Gaza. Nearly 1.7 million people have been displaced since the beginning of Israel's onslaught on October 7. UN officials have repeatedly stated that nowhere in Gaza, including schools, hospitals, residential buildings, and mosques, is spared from Israeli bombings. The UN Agency for Palestinian Refugees warns that it may suspend work if funding is not resumed by the end of the month after over a dozen countries suspended the financial support for UNRWA.
It is a very serious and dramatic development, actually, to suspend the financial resources of the agency. We are talking now about 15 countries that decided to suspend the financial support to the agency. What UNRWA has, maybe financially, it will be enough till the end of this month. And after that, this decision have a very destructive impact on our operation, on millions of Palestinian refugees in the five fields of operation, not only in Gaza. But specifically in Gaza, we are actually the main and the sole provider for humanitarian services. Here, nearly more than 2.3 million of Gazans depending on our aid, and we have in our shelters nearly 1 million Palestinians, either inside the shelters or are registered and around the shelters. We're providing health care to hundreds of thousands of Gazans. Our health clinics are so crowded with tens of thousands of people every day. We're providing also fuel to desalination centers, desalination plants, to sewage system, hospitals, clinics. We are the lifeline of Palestinians here. So stopping the fund or suspending the fund will have a very destructive impact on everything.
A funeral procession has been held in the Iraqi capital Baghdad for those killed in recent U.S. strikes in the country. Mourners took to the streets to commemorate the loss of their fellow countrymen and to condemn Washington's military aggression against their country. At least 16 people were killed and over two dozen wounded in the U.S. air raids, which targeted both civilian and security areas. Iraq condemned the U.S. attacks and summoned the American Charge d'Affaires to Baghdad, handing him a note of protest over the strikes. Palestinian resistance movement Hamas also condemned the attacks, saying the strikes would escalate tensions in the region. The U.S. and Britain say that they have launched a third round of airstrikes on Yemen. They said 36 targets in 13 different locations were hit. The targets, they added, were buried weapons depots, missile systems, and launchers. The U.S. and Britain claim that they seek to protect shipping in the Red Sea. The Yemeni army has been targeting Israeli-run and Israeli-bound ships to push the regime to end its genocide in the Gaza Strip. Yemeni forces have also attacked American and British vessels after the two countries launched strikes on Yemen. On Sunday, the Yemeni army warned that the Western strikes will not pass without response and punishment. The army spokesman Yahya Sari also said such attacks will not deter Sana'a from supporting the Palestinians in the Gaza Strip. More U.S. support for Israel's genocide in Gaza. This time, the House of Representatives has proposed a bill which would provide $17.6 billion in new military assistance to Tel Aviv. Speaker Mike Johnson says the House will vote on the bill next week. The new legislation would include funds to help replenish Israel's missile systems, procure additional advanced weapons systems, and produce artillery and other munitions. Some of the funding would also be used to replenish U.S. arms provided to Israel for its genocidal war in Gaza. The House had previously approved $14.3 billion in military aid to Israel. Political commentator Scott Bennett joined us earlier for comments. He said the U.S. support for Israel means that Washington is complicit in the genocide that Tel Aviv is committing against Palestinians.
This is a confirmation of the United States being on the side of genocide, the side of murdering human beings, in particular women and children, in this demonic rage, rampage of death and destruction and hideous evil that the Israelis are unleashing upon the people of Palestine. And the United States Congress is going to be complicit with that. The only way to really effectively begin to fight all of this is both kinetically and diplomatically, as well as economically. And I think the Houthis and the shutting down of the Red Sea is a very effective economic warfare model that they're fully capable of doing, and I admire their courage for doing it. The other way to handle this, of course, is for a united front from other nations such as Iran, Turkey, Russia, China, writing a joint letter with signatures from each president to the United States Congress, declaring that you, the United States Congress, are put on notice that any weapons that you provide to Israel in the form of economic sustenance and such, you will be liable for the bloodshed and the genocide.
Thousands of Israeli protesters have rallied in Tel Aviv and several other cities demanding the resignation of Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. Protesters demanded the release of Israeli captives held by Palestinian resistance groups. The premier has been under fire for prioritizing his political interests in Gaza over the lives of the captives. Riot police were deployed to disperse the protesters. Netanyahu has been in hot water as he is embroiled in a series of scandals. The Israeli premier is charged with fraud and the breach of trust in a number of cases. This has prompted protesters to take to the streets almost every weekend to call for his immediate resignation. The South Koreans have rallied in the capital, Seoul, to show solidarity with Palestinians in Gaza. This is the 20th consecutive protest to call for an end to the U.S.-Israeli genocidal campaign. Frank Smith has been present at the venue of the event and has filed this report.
Free Palestine, the slogan heard around the world echoed through the streets of the South Korean capital on Saturday as Israeli slaughter of Palestinians in Gaza and the West Bank goes on unabated. Palestinians in Seoul were also present at the event.
Our situation is not from now. No, it's from long time ago, 75 years ago, we faced this kind of killing every day, even in the West Bank or Gaza or Jerusalem or the land which is occupied in 1948. The right is clear and the evil is clear.
Despite the bloodshed of innocent Palestinians, Israel still enjoys the protection of Western powers.
South Korea has abstained from UN votes calling for a ceasefire, although the government has also refrained from fully backing Israel. Seoul does engage in significant arms trade, however, with Tel Aviv. Activists here today, they want that arms trade to stop and for the South Korean government to take a firmer stand against Israel.
The Israeli regime may argue its behavior does not amount to genocide, but since October last year, more than 27,000 Palestinians, mostly civilians, have been killed and almost the entire population of Gaza is displaced. Still, Koreans believe their voices and that of others can make a difference.
I participate in rallies every week in the hope for an end to Israel's genocide and oppression of Palestinians, and to show Palestinians that they are not alone. I hope that more people around the world will participate in protests and marches to show that the voice of Palestinian solidarity is much stronger and much louder than the propaganda being peddled by Israel.
A global protest is planned for February 17th to show solidarity with Palestinians. Frank Smith, Seoul.
On to Britain, where hundreds of thousands have once again marched to the center of London against the U.S.-Israeli genocidal war in Gaza. Protesters slammed the U.K.'s complicity in that genocide and voiced support for the Palestinian people's struggle for liberation. Saeed Pourreza has sent us this report.
The UK's first national demo since the International Court of Justice ruling on the Israeli regime's genocidal war on Gaza was another enormous gathering. People came from all over the UK. The sentiment here, very clearly, ceasefire now.
And I, for one, will not sit at home and watch this genocide played out on television. They said never again in 1948, but it is happening again, and it's a holocaust against the Gazans.
As with all the previous ones, this too was a broad spectrum of anti-war, pro-Palestinian sentiment, all here to push the government to act.
There is a sense here that international public opinion has had an impact, that it's putting irresistible political pressure on the leaders here and around the world. And while the carnage continues, the calls for it to stop are growing louder.
Stop killing babies! Stop killing babies!
In the run-up to the demo, an attempt by police to prevent it from finishing in Whitehall, the seat of government. Yet once again, people power prevailed.
They're designed to intimidate. The police are under their own form of political pressure, but they're also operating in a climate in which they are content to use ever-increasing repressive measures, illegitimate orders under the Public Order Act. We're not going to be intimidated. The people marching aren't going to be intimidated. They'll keep marching, and you'll see hundreds of thousands of them joining us today.
The UK government has been amongst the most hawkish pro-Israel states in the Western world. And the opposition Labour Party has not acted very differently, with its purge of Israel critics from its ranks. Yet the Palestine solidarity movement in Britain has been the largest in Europe.
This is how we are showing those in power how we really feel. And how do we feel? We believe that a genocide is taking place in Palestine, and that it is our government and our arms companies that are weaponizing that genocide and are profiteering from it.
A permanent ceasefire is yet to be achieved. But even if there were one tomorrow, organizers say, this movement isn't going away. The shift in public attitudes towards Palestine and its liberation is permanent. Saeed Pourreza, London.
Now with that, we come to the end for this edition of World News. Thank you so much for being with us. It's bye-bye for now.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
Be aware, the hearts find rest in Allah's remembrance.
Spring of truth.
Allah, ya Allah, now we must no longer say that it is the circumstance of the revolution. The circumstance of the revolution is over. Now the situation is calm. Now is the time to serve the people. Now is the time to serve the society. Now is the time to serve Islam. Now is the time to assure the people about all their things. The capitalist or his capital, the business person of his business, the administrator about his administration.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners. Welcome back to Arab English Radio. This is the Spring of the Truth, and I am Bita, the host of today's episode. And I have the pleasure to be here to actually analyze some ethical and practical points from the viewpoint of Imam Khomeini rahmatullah alayh. As the ritual of the program goes, first we have a word of this respected man and the leader of Islamic nation, which is the most dangerous and the darkest enemy of human being is the self. No other enemy is more detrimental than this enemy. This is a really important point as a key here that we have in so many narrations that the most harmful and detrimental enemy of yours is yourself, which I'm not sure about the exact word of the narrations from Imam Ali, peace be upon him and his family, but he has the same narration. And as you know, fear and love of Allah enables people to submit themselves to Him, to see the best in everything, and to have compassion. In the verses, Allah reveals how the only interest of concern to believers is His approval. So sometimes, in order to defeat this enemy, you have to fill your heart and your soul with the love and guidelines of Allah Almighty Himself. They fulfill their vows and fear a day whose evil will spread far and wide. They give food, despite their love for it, to the poor and orphans and captives. We feed you only out of desire for the face of Allah. We do not want any repayment from you or any thanks. Truly, we fear from our Lord as a glowing day. Allah has called them and saved them from the evil of the day and has made them meet with radiance and pure joy. Ya Rabbana, salli ala Taha al-Nabi wa alihi sallallahu alayhi. Anyone aiming to earn Allah's approval and defeating the enemy of self will not just settle for a solution to his own problems. He will also assume responsibility for resolving the problems of others around him in need. This actually may, of course, require people to give up things they love or to sacrifice their own comfort. The way that Muslims look to protect and watch over the poor by giving alms, help people in need by canceling their debts, and spend their possessions on Allah's path, rather than accumulating and hoarding them, are moral virtues bestowed by the ethicals of the Holy Quran. We came to this point that the important factor in order to defeat the enemy of self and selfishness is to make yourself free from the attachments that you have. And the next level and the next step of this way is to help other people in order to have the Allah Almighty's approval.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Aperture.
Welcome back to Aperture. In the first part, we looked into the adverse effects and potential dangers of psychotropic drugs. We went to France, the number one user of such medication, to see how psychotropic drugs prescribed much too readily and in a cocktail to cure feelings of anxiety and depression have in some cases led to madness, suicide, extreme acts of violence, and murder. Yet the root cause of the extensive use of such drugs seems to be much more than naive and ignorant doctors and desperate patients, especially when a multi-million dollar industry is at stake. Stay with us for the rest of the documentary.
In the Congress room, many conferences take place one after another, but nobody is dealing with the dangers of antidepressants. One of them is led by Anthony Rothschild, a psychiatrist well known for his successful books on psychotropic drugs. The great specialist is holding a debate on the adaptation of treatments depending on the illness. But not once does he say that antidepressants should not be prescribed. Our question is straightforward.
It seems that there is a lot of danger with antidepressants. What do you think about this? Like suicide or, murders?
No. I mean, I don't know what you're talking about, but I just told you there's no reliable scientific evidence that antidepressants cause people to commit murder or any other crime or suicide.
So how come that on boxes?
All right, this is not serious, okay?
Is this a surprising reaction? Anthony Rothschild also has conflicts of interest with an impressive number of pharmaceutical companies.
So I told you what I thought. You're going to keep asking me the same question.
Okay.
Well, right, you got my quote, all right?
Okay, very good.
How can such things still be said in this day and age when on all the stands promoting psychotropic medication, whole boards are covered by signs warning of side effects? Among the several side effects, the risk of suicide or violent behavior is prioritized by all. These warnings are a legal obligation enforced by medical organizations. But how much are these warnings worth next to the publicity hype from the pharmaceutical companies?
When you're depressed, where do you want to go? Nowhere. Who do you feel like seeing? No one. Depression hurts in so many ways.
These ads banned in France reach tens of millions of households in the United States, one of the rare countries where the promotion of medication is allowed. For the promoters of these ads, a new customer is a captive customer. This is what Michael Baum denounces, a lawyer specializing in the pharmaceutical industry. This man is a nightmare for the laboratories. His trials have cost them billions of dollars. His theme, denouncing the addictive effects of medication.
One of the issues with these drugs is once you're on, you can't get off. They become a captive audience. And they get trained, basically, the patients get trained to stay on it. It's if they take the drug and then stop the drug, they start experiencing these brain zaps, or they start experiencing these nausea symptoms or these severe headaches or dizziness. And then they take the drug. They go back on it, and it goes away. Well, they get reinforced with the concept of, I need to stay on it. And they think that maybe, and what doctors used to think, was that they were relapsing back into their depression. That isn't what was happening at all.
The dangers of psychotropic drugs have been well known for a long time. Since September 1991, the American Medication Agency has had to react against waves of complaints against Prozac, the grandfather of modern antidepressants. This drug has been blamed for hundreds of suicides and murders, and administration officials are getting together to determine whether a correlation exists between Prozac and acts of violence. In front of this committee of reputed psychiatrists are the families of victims.
My husband didn't believe me. He was a pharmacist. We came back, and on April 30, he just blew his brains out in front of all of us. How many more have to die before somebody looks? If we made a mistake, we're humans.
After being on Prozac for 21 days, my wife shot and killed both of these two boys right here. She turned the gun to herself and shot herself twice. I heard these people talking about scientific data. For those that don't say we have scientific data.
I entered therapy 1 year ago as a victim of rape.
I stand before you today a victim of Prozac. It baffles my mind to think that a prescription drug I could simply compare to a felony of rape. But yes, they can be compared, because if a drug robs you of your will to live, then it has committed a felony equal to that of rape.
She shot herself on the head.
This was the date of my first...
For a whole day, witnesses will make statements. It's overwhelming.
I firmly believe the drug...
The internist...
How many more people are going to be killed and maimed before you do something? You have the power to change things. You have the power to listen to what we say and investigate what we say. We need help.
Following the statements, the committee votes.
There is credible evidence to support a conclusion that antidepressant drugs cause the emergence and/or intensification of suicidality and/or other violent behaviors. Those in favor of that statement vote yes. Those opposed to that statement, no.
There is total surprise. Unanimously, the committee declares that there is no link between Prozac and the violence described by the families of the victims.
Vote on the following statement.
Jeffrey Lieberman is a member of the committee. Later, he goes on to be the all-powerful president of the American Psychiatric Association. And of the 10 psychiatrists present during the vote, 9 of them had conflicts of interest with one or several pharmaceutical companies. When Prozac was launched, the Lilly Pharmaceutical Company worked very hard. But one of the board directors even denounced the methods he had himself used to boost sales of the drug. He is John Virapen, and he was director of Lilly in Sweden until 1988. And it's not his style to beat around the bush.
When our patients were consumers, and we are being ripped off right, left, and center. And unfortunately, as I see it today, the drug companies have the power, total power. They are in all corners of the industrial complex. They're in there somewhere doing dirty work.
And you were a part of it.
And I was a part. That's why I'm able to tell you all of this. I was a part of it. I've done, my hands are dirty. I'm trying to clean now. It's redemption time.
It's time for redemption. And John Virapen has written a book with a provocative title, Side Effects, Death. Notably, it discusses the way in which he was asked to conceal side effects.
The doctors prescribe to the patient, but don't tell them anything because they don't know. They rely completely on what the pharma industry tells them. These little salesmen that run around, I was a salesman too. And they used to instruct me when I was a salesman. The first thing is, you don't talk side effects with doctors.
Why do they do that? Because they want to make money, 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 money. They don't care about your lives. They only care about their wallets.
From conferences to interviews, John Virapen does not hesitate to reveal what he implemented to encourage sales, corruption, gifts, and trips.
To children. General practitioners, they don't usually get to go to them big Congress and World Congress here and there. So one day I got the idea that maybe we should do something with these guys. So I gathered a whole bunch of them and took them to Singapore. Fly them down to Singapore and gave them works. I mean, it was exclusive. When they came back, my sales escalated.
In light of these accusations, Lilly, the lab that created Prozac, did not wish to meet with us. But this is what they said by email. John Virapen has not been employed by Lilly since 1988. He therefore cannot be considered as a credible source of information concerning the current activities of the group, its motives, or practices. The Lilly Pharmaceutical Company, like all the others, nevertheless fought hard so that the American administration did not impose a black box warning on antidepressant leaflets, an explicit caution against the risks of suicide or violent behavior. But in 2004, finally, it became a done deal. This victory is owed to the activism of victims' families and their lawyers, such as Andy Vickery. The pharmaceutical industry also has a bone to pick with this Texan. He also received billions in compensation during the famous arrangements whereby laboratories preferred to pay out rather than stand trial. To better explain how a pill can kill, he makes use of a puzzle. His demonstration, he claims, applies for all psychotropic drugs.
Is there a phenomenon, a distinct phenomenon, of Prozac-induced suicide? The first attribute is the patients became suddenly suicidal. People who've never thought of killing themselves, of harming themselves, take one of these drugs, whoom, they go instantly from that feeling to death. The second piece of the puzzle was that the suicides were all violent. I've shared with you already the story of Pat Williamson. She was on Prozac 9 days when she came in one morning to her husband and said, "Honey, would you show me how to kill myself?" And her husband said, "Oh, Pat, please." And he decides to go check up on her after 15 or 20 minutes and finds that she has made 100 mutilating cuts in her body. The third piece of the puzzle that Eli Lilly noticed was an obsessive quality to the act. It's just this sudden impulse to do something really violent, really dangerous to themselves or others. And it's just, they're just overwhelmed by it. They're obsessed with the idea, and they cannot control their behavior. In the period of time between the person starts to take the drug and the time of their death or suicide attempt, that there's abnormal behavior. Something different is going on. And sometimes the medical help is, "Oh, you just need to take more of this drug. Let's increase your dose." It's like, "Oh, there's a little fire. Let's pour some gasoline on it." And the final piece of the puzzle is, almost all of the cases that I have handled, the death has happened within 30 days of the time the person either started the drug or had their dose increased.
Once again, Lilly Laboratory only answers our accusations by mail. They explain that one of the most striking studies in the last few years shows that there is a decrease in suicide, negative 32%, and in mortality, negative 49%, when depressed patients take antidepressants. But what is the truth? This study is contested by other studies that claim the contrary. And if in the United States, thousands of victims came to the forefront, then why would France be spared, the leading consumer worldwide of psychotropic drugs? In April 2014, a court trial would clarify the current state of affairs in an enlightening manner. Back in December 2008, Jean is depressed. He struggles to deal with his professional life, and at the birth of his son, he attempts suicide. He therefore went to the psychiatrist, Dr. Gossaris. The doctor recommends that he try out a new antidepressant, which was not yet available on the market, Brintellix. Jean did not react to the treatment. The psychiatrist proposed to double the dosage. A few days later, Jean set himself on fire. Corinne, Jean's wife, refused to believe that it was a random suicide. She alerted the authorities, and Dr. Gossaris was put under inspection on 7 charges. He was accused of embezzlement, but worse, putting others' lives in danger for at least 8 patients, including Jean, Corinne's husband. On April 30th, 2014, the doctor was strangely judged in Bordeaux, the court where he himself was a judiciary expert. He received a suspended sentence of 6 months that he appealed. But why would the pharmaceutical company Lundbeck, the creators of the antidepressants, not be investigated themselves? The pharmaceutical company Lundbeck has no interest in this affair going public. They've invested millions in order to get Brintellix approved by medical authorities. However, Jean was not at all the same since his dosage of Brintellix was raised, as described by Corinne and her mother. For Lundbeck, it is therefore not Brintellix that is to blame, but Jean's depression. It's a credible defense, which is used by all pharmaceutical companies when they are blamed. However, We also met with other victims of this trial period, and bizarrely, they all described the same symptoms. Such as Christian Mounier, who also tested Brintellix for 8 months. Since, he has lost his job, his memory, and he describes himself as a vegetable. A man who is no longer himself, another who commits suicide, apparently devastating side effects for 8 sufferers. But there was also the suicide of 2 more patients just after coming off Brintellix. This bad streak should have alerted the authorities. However, nothing would come of it, as on the same day as Jean's self-immolation, Dr. Gosseres wiped his name from the file. His death was therefore no longer related to the clinical tests. The medical authorities explained to us that for each test of a drug, they only receive the results achieved across the whole territory. The botched trials of Dr. Gosseres were therefore lost in the mass and mixed with several other accepted studies across the world, as this document shows that makes Brintellix's market release official. Lundbeck throws the blame back to the public health authorities. So what can be said of the package insert that we found in the United States, where Brintellix has been approved since 2013? Side effects are documented in 2 whole pages. Especially, though, the principal paragraph warns against the raised risk of suicidal thoughts and behaviors. It's the famous black box warning. In other words, the highest alert level. In France, Brintellix has just been approved for sale on the market. It has therefore been judged as useful in fighting depression. The doors are slammed shut. Jean is responsible for his own atrocious suicide. Just like the death of Mark, Aurélie's murderous thoughts and suicide attempt, or the fall of Christian Mounier. If the effectiveness of such medication on most serious depressive states cannot be denied, how many more tragedies need to occur before the effects of psychotropic drugs on some patients are truly recognized?
Seems that as long as money and power are involved in the realm of healthcare, pills that are expected to cure depression actually cause suicide and murder. And that's it for this week's program. Until next week and another Aperture, it's goodbye.
This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily, round the clock, for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz, every day, from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Southern Africa can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz, every day, from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our program via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is pasttoday.ir/en. Now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
This is
for a better life.
For a better life.
فرمود بعثت لأتمم مكارم الأخلاق.
The Holy Prophet of Islam says, I have been sent to complete noble manners.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. السلام عليكم, dear listeners from all around the world. For a better life here, once again, we have the chance to be here, talk about different hints and different dimensions of human beings in order to have a better life. Let's start this episode with one of the most beautiful sentences I've read from Imam Khomeini rahmatullah alayh, which is, one of the blessings of this revolution has been the spiritual transformation observed in our society. I have repeatedly said that this spiritual transformation witnessed in Iran, brought about by this revolution with the will of God, the Most Exalted, the Most High, has been more valuable and more important than the victory we have achieved or the fact that we have curtailed the hands of the foreigners and criminals from this country. Actually, this beautiful sentence will remind us about the inner revolutions and inner changes that we go through, and more importantly, about the fact that human beings have this potential capacity to get changed, to go and develop, to reach the level of perfection. So, self-making and attaining to the highest level of perfection have ever been the final objectives of every human being, knowingly or unknowingly. Nevertheless, this is not an easy task, as it requires, first of all, that one should recognize oneself, improve one's abilities, and then advance towards the set objectives. So, guiding people to achieve this great objective has been the obligation undertaken by the divine prophets and godly reformers. As we all know, man becomes the subject of various branches of science from different aspects, like psychology, sociology, history, ethics, medicine, and even physiology and biology are branches of science which deal with man from a specific point of view. We're going to discuss man from the viewpoint that he's a being who can undergo perfection. We will deal with the ultimate form of perfection and the way it can be reached. So, we will endeavor to recognize the way to reap more and better benefit from internal abilities and external facilities to reach perfection and true prosperity by means of reflecting in our own being and finding elements in our nature which are established to lead to and fulfill the main objectives and recognizing inclinations existing for sublime human causes as well as relations which tie us with one another and enable us to make ourselves more powerful and prepared for progress and development by using them and striving to solidify and strengthen them. We take a stride towards the development of ourselves and others. So let's go for a short break in order to get refreshed, then we're going to come back in a blink of an eye. Stay tuned.
Your mercy, your love is all I need. All I need, all I need, all I need, all I need, oh, 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 oh,
love is all I need. Welcome back to your listeners of IRIB English Radio. You're listening to the program For a Better Life. As you know, we're talking and looking at human beings from the dimension that we'll actually consider human beings as some creatures that have the potential capacity to reach to the level of perfection. First of all, the first step that we have to take in order to get to the level of perfection and development is this necessity of self-recognition. I believe the first step for self-recognition is this question: what am I and where am I? These two questions are the basic of the philosophy of self-recognition and the time of revolution that will happen in your soul in order to know yourself better and more. For a being that is by nature possessed of self-love, it is perfectly natural to engage in self-recognition and try to recognize the elements of his perfection and the means to reach it. As a result, understanding the necessity of self-recognition does not require complex rational or reasons. For this reason, negligence towards this reality and absorption in matters which are by no means effective in leading man to perfection and prosperity is unnatural and leads to deviation. And the reason behind this matter must be sought, and means of establishing soundness and salvation from it must be recognized. So, principally, all human endeavors, be they scientific or practical, are carried out to provide the enjoyments, interests, and benefits to man. As a consequence, recognition of man himself, his beginning, his end, as well as the perfection which he might reach, is prior to any other issue. Without the recognition of man's reality and his true value, all other discussions and efforts would rather be fruitless and baseless. Let's have some verses of Holy Quran which will enlighten us in order to understand more about the self-recognition and self-awareness process. And be not like those who forsook Allah, so he made them forsake their own souls. Elsewhere it says, take care of your souls. He who errs cannot hurt you when you are the right way. Another one. We will soon show them our signs in the universe and in their own souls, until it will become quite clear to them that it is the truth. It, however, accords a special status to the verses pertaining to the soul with such an interpretation that, and in your own souls too, will you not then see? The Holy Quran has reproached those who do not endeavor for self-awareness and who do not see divine signs within themselves. The Holy Prophet, peace be upon him, and his family, has also maintained an exceptional significance for self-recognition and has introduced it as the means of theism. Whoever recognizes himself has recognized his Lord. In this regard, numerous traditions with various contexts have been related from the Amir al-Mu'mineen, peace be upon him. So, self-recognition is the most beneficial of all recognition. Let's put it here. We're going to go for a short break. Then we're going to come back, dear listeners, for the last part of the episode of For a Better Life. Welcome back to IRIB English Radio. Dear listeners, this is the last part of our episode. As you know, we were talking about the process of self-recognition and we came to this point that self-recognition is the most beneficial of all recognition. And there are some sentences from Amir al-Mu'mineen, peace be upon him, that I'm going to narrate them for you as the last part of our episode. I am surprised at one who seeks what he has lost while he has lost himself, his identity and essence, and doesn't search for it. I wonder how a person who doesn't recognize himself can recognize his Lord. The ultimate point of knowledge is for man to reach self-recognition. the greatest reward belongs to one who reaches self-recognition. The mom is also related as saying the more the man gains knowledge, the more he endeavors for himself and strives in the way of being educated and reformed. Thank you, dear listeners, for listening to me at this episode of For a Better Life. I wish it was helpful for you, and you consider these episodes as triggers for you in order to go and seek more knowledge and self-recognition for a better life. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Every grain of sand in every desert land he knows. Every shade of palm, every closed hand he knows. Every sparkling tear on every eyelash he knows. Every thought I have and every word I share he knows.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran.